I'm Robin Rylett, and I want to thank you so much for joining me. And I also want to thank for joining me the host of Exploring Music, Bill McLaughlin. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Robin. It's great to hear your voice.
It's good to hear your voice, too. And I know that's what many of our listeners are thinking right now, excited to hear what you have to say about Exploring Music. I do have some listener questions for you. And I also wanted to ask you about your new website, because I've been looking at it, and it's really cool, I have to say. There's so many great features on it. And I wanted to talk about a few of those, if that's okay with you.
Be delighted to talk about it. Yeah, it's just rolling out right now. And over the years, our number one FAQ is, how can I hear Exploring Music when it fits my schedule? And we've always had to say, you can't. You just have to hear when it gets broadcast on the air. But now we've finally found a way around it. We have some very clever lawyers. And we now have a subscription site. You can find it at exploringmusic.org.
Well, one of the things I thought was pretty cool was on the program list, you have it alphabetized. So people can look by the title of a program or by the name of a composer. And I have to just throw out a couple of my favorite titles. Don't Shoot the Piano Player.
Betrays a youth spent in art houses. That's a Truffaut-like movie.
And then here's another one I like. What else you got?
Yeah, that was actually the invention of my engineer, Bill Sigmund, who's actually sitting here with me in the studio in Chicago today. Yeah, it's the sort of idea of like a composer has had some big hit tunes, and he goes to this Broadway producer and says, okay, that was good, but so what else you got?
You know what impresses me is I bet I could name each one of these and you would be able to tell me about it. And you've been doing this for 10 years now. That's a lot of hours of music programming.
Well, look who's talking.
That's true. I guess any of us who've been doing this for a while have, you know, have a lot of hours under our belt. One of the other aspects of the site that I thought was really cool is if people go to the program list and then they click on See All Programs, they'll also get a link to a site that says For Educators or For Education. So could you tell me a little bit about that? I thought that was so fascinating.
Well, when Steve Robinson and I first started to get this idea 10 years ago, education was primary, one of the things, because we feel that there are sort of two levels of education, aren't there, Robin? There's the one for the kids, and then there's one for the two or three generations of adults who are out there who haven't gotten much music education in the school. So they started to cut band programs and music education programs in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And for a lot of those people, classical music can seem sort of daunting. I mean, like, what's this Brahms symphony? It's got movements. I can't clap between the pieces. It's not like a Bruce Springsteen concert. What do I do? And so I think what we wanted to say is, come on inside. Yeah, and the educational program, we really are going to push this more. We're actually going to develop some program and some sort of like lesson plans for teachers to use in the schools.
I think it's such a great idea. I hear from music educators in our listening area all the time. And sometimes they'll send me emails when they're preparing their classroom for their next class about some piece of music that I've played. And I know that there's so many dedicated, passionate music educators who really want to share their love of music with the next generations. And I just think that your show is such a great way to do that. You know, we say about our listeners, and I'm sure you do that too, that they are lifelong learners. So it doesn't matter what age you are. Our listeners really want to learn and dig deep, which is what you do with Exploring Music. So it is. It's great for any age.
Yeah, you're onto something really profound, which is that I really think one of the greatest joys human beings have is in learning something. And it's true whether you're 4 years old or 84 years old. People just get so excited when they learn something, it barely can hold still. And it's really fun to turn people into a piece of music that I love or that you love and say, look, come on inside. Listen to this favorite spot of mine. See that? Now let's sit back and hear the whole piece.
You know, Bill, I have to say that listening to your show has changed the way I host my own show. There are things that I will talk about that I don't think I would have felt free to talk about before, just about house. In fact, I just did it this morning. I played the Hallelujah Chorus. And instead of saying other things I guess I could have said, I talked about how he used those seven particular words, King of Kings and Lords of Lords, and how he just built on that. And I know that that's come for me from listening to your show in the evenings. at home. And I so appreciate when you do that. I don't think I can do it quite as well as you do, but you've certainly inspired me, and I know you've inspired so many other people with how you look at the music.
Yeah, I spend a tremendous amount of time getting ready for the show, just doing exactly that. I mean, listening to the music, certainly, but I get the music as much as I can from the library or online, or I have it at home, and actually just sit there reading the music like a book. I mean, I did this for years and years as an orchestra conductor, so I can read a score. But you sit there and you think, oh, look at that. Oh, there's a relationship there that people could hear if you help them point out just this little connection that he's borrowing a note from here and then here and then here. And you see how what that does it? So it's really fun. And the example you bring up from Messiah is so much fun. I wish I could sing. I can't. But I've conducted Messiah a couple of times. And when you get to the climax that you're talking about, the top of your head blows off.
It does. It does. Just about, well, figuratively, but hopefully not literally.
Right, right.
But it
gives you blow your lid.
But it does. You do. You blow your lid and you just feel that excitement within yourself building and that joy that I think comes from that particular piece of music. You know, what you just said about sitting down with a score and preparing for the show brings me to a question from one of our listeners, Austin Schlichting, who remembers when you were here in Pullman at Washington State University and you hosted a program with the WSU Solstice Wind Quintet. And
they were spectacular.
Weren't they fun? And for us, it was a real thrill having you here. And Austin really enjoyed your lecture about your own music, and he told me he was especially flattered when you called on him saying you must be a composer. So from one composer to another, that kind of recognition is really special. And he has a question that I think goes along to what you were saying about preparing for your show. He wants to know if you have a favorite theorist, living or dead, who you can always rely on to have accurate and poignant information that even a classical music novice can appreciate.
Theorist, that's what the sticking point is. For years and years, I mean, I loved the pianist and author, Charles Rosen, and I used to recommend his book, The Classic Style, to all my friends until I realized, for a lot of folks, it's not a great place to start. It requires somebody who already knows an awful lot about music, and ideally someone who could sit down and actually play the piano reductions that he prints in the pages of the score. And I don't know, theorists and stuff. I mean, there are some theorists I go back to that are very arcane. Heinrich Schenker was a Viennese theorist. And it changed when I studied Schenker analysis. It changed the way I would think about really big pieces, Mahler symphonies, or even in the long run, a whole act of a Wagner opera. But I'm afraid I don't have a good theorist. I can think of fun to read Aaron Copland, What to Listen For in Music. It's fun to read Leonard Bernstein, almost anything he ever wrote, but especially The Joy of Music and some of those essays and the pieces he used to do with the Omnibus or the Young People's Concerts. Those are really good. I wouldn't call them theorists precisely, but they're imbued with the theory of music, and they're trying to give you the tools to deal with it.
I think that's a good place to start, and I think there are probably many of our listeners right now who have read books written by composers and have learned a lot from them, and I think that is a really great place to start. One of the things I liked about your website is you go behind the scenes, and people can click on about exploring music and then read an article about the making of an exploring music program. So I was wondering if you could tell me, if you could give us and our listeners just a little bit of an idea. I know the process is probably much longer than you have time to talk about in a few minutes, but if you could give us what you think are some of the key things that go into making an exploring music program.
The most recently finished program is a new program on Wagner operas, which we're going to play next week. It's the 200th anniversary of Wagner's birth. And we had done some shows some years ago on the four ring operas. I mean, it's a little bit nuts, isn't it? Trying to stick those four huge operas into 5 hours of radio. So the only thing to top that was to stick seven different operas into another 5 hours of radio. And we were working on that, and I still came up with all the stuff I hadn't understood about Wagner, because you're thrown it. I found early works that I had never really listened to, like the Faust Overture, which was originally to have been a Faust symphony. It's during the time he was plainly under the influence of Hector Berlioz. And then we went all the way through Parsifal, which is another of the Wagner pieces. It's certainly part of the standard repertoire, but I never really studied it myself. I knew the orchestral excerpts like Good Friday Music or the Prelude, but hearing it all the way through takes you inside that world. I'm not sure if I'm answering the question at all. I've kind of gotten lost. You're asking about how we make it. Well, okay, just taking a Wagner as a topic, then we start to get all of this music. The folks in Chicago, I guess it's okay to say, they burn MP3s and send them to me through the internet so I can listen to the music. We don't actually copy them, so I think it's legal. But I listen to, for a Wagner program like that, might have 600 hours in iTunes. When we did a show called Black, Brown, and Beige, Portraits in Black, Brown, and Beige, this set of 2 weeks on music of African-American composers and performers, I had 1,800 songs in my iTunes collection for that, the way iTunes counts them. You know, and you really, I guess, can't probably listen to every single one of them, but I tried to. All the Library of Congress things, all the Folkways things from the Smithsonian was so interesting. So there's a lot of homework that goes into that.
But Bill, how in the world do you? I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you. But how in the world do you narrow 1,800 songs down and all the other things you must have listened to even 2 weeks full of shows? That's yeah, incredible. Well, how do you do that?
A lot of homework. I mean, I started with a wonderful book, Eileen Southern's History of African American Performers and Composers, which is spectacular and fun to read. I might say it's encyclopedia, but it's really fun to read. And I used her as a guide to get going because I didn't know the very, very early stuff. In fact, there's nothing left from, say, 17th century music of African brought to the United States. So you can go to Africa, though, and find things in Ghana, for example, that are quite similar. And we see how that connects with spirituals, with jazz, with rap even. And you just try to keep listening to music and thinking about it until something that strikes you as so interesting that you absolutely have to tell somebody about it on the radio shows up.
Well, that brings me to something that I think is just so unique about you and your program. You said you read something and you just have to tell people about it. But I think that's why you connect so well to people, because of your excitement and your enthusiasm that you bring to the subject. You have done subjects and done certain composers that I will confess are not necessarily my favorites, but after I listen to your show, I have a new respect and I like them in a different way than I did before. It gives me a new appreciation for them, and it really changes my viewpoint of that composer, and I'm pretty sure that's happened to our listeners on occasion, where you'll dig deep into a topic, and they'll go, wow, this is really interesting. I never knew that about that composer, or I never heard that before. And you also mentioned Black, Brown, and Beige, which I have to tell you is one of my favorite programs. I loved that series. I absolutely loved it. And it brings me to something on your website where people can tell you about what, not only what their favorite exploring music program or moment, I would have to say programs or moments, because I think that's pretty hard to just pick one, and also what topics they'd like you to cover in the future, which I, very interactive, I like that.
I'm glad if that's working. We built that in to begin with, and the whole idea, I do like this idea of carrying on a conversation. In a way, I'm trying to carry on a conversation with composers who may have lived 200 or 300 years ago. I'm trying to, in the way that a scholar of literature is carrying on a conversation with Shakespeare or, you know, or Proust, in the same way we're dealing with Monteverdi or Mozart or Aaron Copland. And then the audience can get into it that same way, too. It's fantastic if they can talk back to you and we have a kind of colloquy together.
Well, when you think back on all the programs you've done, can you pick out a favorite or favorites, or is that impossible to do? Is that like asking who's your favorite niece?
Yeah, actually, it is. It's almost like, actually, I only have one daughter and one son, so I never had to pick which is my favorite daughter and son, and I'm not getting into which is my favorite child either. But it is like that. I could think of, you know, there was a show that we did called A Green and Simple Land. It was a set of English landscape composers, most of them not so well known. Okay, Vaughan Williams in Britain, a few others, but a lot of them pretty much don't get played so much on this side of the Atlantic Ocean. But their music was so beautiful and so evocative, and it also had wonderful poetry and writing about the English landscape to be able to quote from. So, I mean, there's something that I thought, wow. A lot of times when I go to a radio station and say, if I'm coming in for an interview and you're driving toward the station and you hear something you really like, you never heard it before, there's a good chance it's English music. And the disc jockey has gone to the thing and said, I got 15 minutes to fill before Bill gets here. I'll just pull that one because people love that. And then all of a sudden you're listening to Arnold Bax or whatever it is. And I thought, I want to explore that music because I know say, a dozen of these pieces, but now let's learn lots more.
Well, and that is, again, one of the things I think that's nice about your show is I think it's educative, not just for music educators or children, as you said, those various generations who didn't really get a lot of music education in school. But
right.
I think it's been an education for me as well. And it's been, I'm always humbled by this job, for lack of a better word, that you and I have with classical music, because it seems to me that there's so much to learn that you can't even begin to scratch the surface of it. And I don't say that lightly, because you do definitely more than scratch the surface, but you know what I mean? It's just such a rich repertoire spanning centuries that...
You're right. It never wears out. That's the fantastic thing. I was talking with a friend earlier this morning. I said, if I were a tennis player, say we're a serious tennis player, I'd been done 30 years ago, if I were lucky, right? But the great thing is conductors and radio hosts, we can kind of go on for a really long time. And it's very interesting. I think that's what it's keeping us alive in a way.
Well, it's just finding and discovering and exploring new kinds of music or new angles to, well, you have a show called New Wine in Old Bottles. I remember that one too, that kind of thing where you're, the other concept of that is that you are always discovering something new in something that you hear. And Bill, has it ever happened to you that you've played a piece of music that you've heard hundreds of times and because of where you are in your life or maybe even the mood you are at that moment, you hear something completely new?
Mm-hmm. It happens all the time. And I'm dealing with, say, works of Mozart or Schubert or Brahms that I've known all of my life, that I've conducted many times, I've played in orchestras, and you still find these new elements. You think, oh, I understand what's going on now. I never noticed that little connection in the bass line to the viola. And it's fantastic because it can open up in a whole new way of understanding a beautiful piece of music that was sort of one of your favorite pieces anyway.
Yeah, that's so nice. We're very lucky, aren't we?
We are indeed.
And I think we're lucky to be able to share this music with so many people around the country and around the world. I know people can listen to Exploring Music online through your website. So you're really reaching a lot of people. I wanted to mention something. I got a call from a listener named Mark, and I had to think about this. I listened to his message several times, and he was talking about Orthodox music, and he was saying that there's this signature sound of Russian Orthodox music. It sounds very different as opposed to Greek Orthodox, as one example. And I think in his message, he was linking that signature sound of Russian Orthodox music to the fact that so many of the famous Russian composers like Rimsky-Korsakov, Rachmaninoff, Tchaikovsky have written settings of Orthodox music. And I wondered what you thought about that.
Well, I can hear what he's talking about. I'm just thinking offhand the spot in the... Tchaikovsky, Pathetik, his last symphony, and there's a spot in the first one where the trombones come in and they play something that's straight out of the Russian liturgy. You can hear it. It's not Gregorian chant, it's Orthodox chant. And for the people who were fortunate enough to grow up in a culture where that was around, that becomes part of their language.
Well, in it's a way that I think we have that too in North America. But it may not go back so far in history as it might in some older countries where there are folk songs and things like, well, have you ever listened to the beginning? Well, I know you have, the beginning of Grieg's Piano Concerto in A minor, and you can hear Soon It's Gonna Rain from the Fantastics in that. You know, you can make these wonderful connections all the time between, for lack of a better word, popular music. I don't know how to define genres. I've been in this business so long, I can't stand music genres anymore. I just think they're meaningless. But you can make all these connections all the time between music from past and present. And so have you ever done a show on Orthodox music? I was looking through your program list because, you know, Northwest Public Radio is one of the newer stations to come on the Exploring Music train. So have you done something like that before?
No, not specifically. We've done shows, various shows on Russian music. We did one on the Russian handful, they call them, the Mighty Five. Mm-hmm. We've done them on Tchaikovsky. We did a couple of weeks. We did Rimsky-Korsakov. We've done Prokofiev and Shostakovich and Stravinsky. But that's a very interesting point to... It might be interesting to start with... that's much smaller. With Constantine. Setting up Christianity is the is the base religion of Rome and of Byzantium at the same time, and then the division between the Church of Rome and the Church of Byzantium, and going to the east, Constantinople, and how that spread all through the Slavic countries, so that their alphabet was given them actually by Greek teachers, Greek priests, Cicero and Methodius. And all of that music has some things that are like, there are elements in Dvorak that remind me of what I hear in Shostakovich sometimes. The two people are completely different personalities, but they do have that in their background. Of course, with Dvorak, he's in Bohemia, so part of him is very much connected to Austria as a result, and they have the West as well as East. It's a very interesting thing, Robin.
Well, maybe and this will be a series.
Well, yeah, usually when somebody gives me a good idea, I go like, oh, man, I start to think of all the reasons why we are going to have a hard time doing it. In fact, when with Black, Brown, and Beige, somebody said, look, Black History Month comes around every year. Why don't we do something? It's a great idea, but I don't know enough. And then eventually you get to a spot where you make yourself try to learn enough so that you can come up with something to say that's interesting.
Well, you know, Bill, I don't mean this as false flattery in any way, but I guess it's sort of encouraging to me to hear you say, I don't know enough, because I think that you know so much. You know, it's just like, how could you say you don't know enough? But I think that's also why you're good at what you do, because you are also a lifelong learner.
Right. And it's like not so long ago, I think it was around Christmas time, was like a listener who lives in Rochester, New York, wrote in. He said, I liked your bit on Janáček. I wonder if you'd ever consider a show on Gabriel Fauré. And he didn't just suggest Fauré, which was a very good idea, but he listed about 10 or 12 pieces that he would like to hear on the radio. So I wrote back and said, what a great idea. I will do that. I hadn't had Fauré at the top of my list. And then starting with those 10 or 12 pieces, it let me know, again, pretty soon I had 200 songs in my iBook. And a lot of them I'd never heard before. We know the Requiem. We know Pelléas et Mélisande. We know a lot of the really beautiful, well-known songs. But there's so much piano music, there's chamber music, and all of a sudden a whole world opens up. And with it, also a glimpse into what it was like to be in Paris in the 1870s and 80s and 90s and all the way to 1924 when he died.
Well, you never know where inspiration will strike. So if you end up doing a show on Orthodoxy, can I give Mark some credit for that? Or
credit goes to Wazoo and to Robin and to Mark.
Okay.
Actually, my engineer had a buddy who went to school there. He told me to call it that.
Oh, he did? All right. That shows you're a real insider. And next you'll be, saying go Cougs. So that would be the ultimate.
All right. I'll sneak that in next time.
Okay. Well, Bill, can you tell us about some shows coming up that you're particularly excited about?
Yeah, there's the Wagner program that I had just mentioned, because we've just finished that, and we're actually still editing it. I saw Jesse McQuarters, our wonderful producer, finishing it off so they can get it off to the stations to play starting next week. We'll play the 2 weeks of Wagner in a row. The recent one with the new seven operas. No, not seven. They're the seven operas that are not Ring operas, and then the following week we'll have a rebroadcast of the Ring programs, and that's always fun to look forward to. And, there some things are sort of just past range. I like this idea of Orthodox music, but I don't quite know how to crack it. I'm not sure that I want to hear on Exploring Music 5 hours of Russian choruses. But you know what I mean very well, because you're dealing with this all the time. So you think like, okay, if I play two in a row, people are fine. There's a certain point where variety has to come in. You have to have a theme, but a little bit of variety gives, pleasure, just the same when you want to eat the same thing for dinner 5 times in a row.
But that's true. But I would say to you, I still throw down the gauntlet to you on this, because hardly have I ever listened to one of your week's themes where you only play the music from that composer. You're always bringing in other things. So I believe that this is something you should put on the back burner and let percolate for a while and see what comes out of your fertile imagination, because even this week with the Schubert, it's not like we just hear Schubert. We hear all sorts of music, inspirations, and you pull in so many disparate parts of the music world and bring them together, which I honestly think is one of the things that's really interesting about your show, and which makes it unique, is it's not, yes, it's a focus on a composer or a subject, but it's bringing in so many other kinds of musical traditions and forms and weaving them together and creating a story, really, about it. I know you can do this, Bill.
Thanks, Robin. I'm fond of you for 10 years now, but I'm really impressed by your confidence. You're talking about Schubert. One thing, earlier in the week, we played an episode where I mentioned that Gary Olson, the wonderful pianist, that once said to me, well, you know, Schubert's a little Meshuggah in A minor. And I said, yeah, I know what you mean. And I thought, Gary Olson, that's Swedish. It pops Italian. McLaughlin's Irish and Scottish. But we're using this Yiddish word, Meshuggah. So I talked about it a little, and we actually listened to the three A minor sonatas of Schubert to see how Meshuggah he was in A minor, which is a sort of mixed up thing. And I said it came from a German word, Mischung. Boy, was I wrong. And I got 12 emails. You can't put, these people haven't figured out how to put Hebrew letters into an email. So they had to describe what the letters look like. So it's actually based on three Hebrew letters, and the root sounds like Mischung in German, but it's actually old, old Jewish expression for somebody who's a little bit mixed up, maybe even a little crazy.
Well, that's very interesting, isn't it?
Yep.
And, you know, it brings me to another quick comment that I think our listeners are such interesting people. I so appreciate each and every one of you that are listening to Northwest Public Radio right now, because you have given me such inspiration over the years, and I know you've received the same, Bill. And also, you challenge us. You know, you correct us when necessary. You inspire us. It really is a great relationship that in public radio we have with our listeners.
Well, thank you so much. I was so pleased when you guys decided to carry Exploring Music. It goes now to some of my favorite parts of the whole world, the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, it's a pretty nice spot that we live in over here.
And I've got to come back and visit.
Yes, you do. That would be great to have you here. Come back and... And, you know, you could explore the Palouse or something, explore the Pacific Northwest and all the regions and all the indigenous music here would be, maybe that could be a theme for exploring music.
Could well be.
Well, Bill, I know your time is short and you've got to go here in a couple minutes. Is there something, anything you'd like to share with our listeners that
you know,
we didn't cover?
My boss, Steve Robinson, was just in here when you and I were talking about the schools, and he put a number in front of me. I didn't even know this myself. We talked about getting access to our subscriptions through our website, exploringmusic.org. Steve's got a number in front of me. I'll give it to you, 773-279-2114. And that's for special rates for schools and educators. And I hadn't even known we'd gotten this going yet. This website is still brand new. We're just rolling it out this week. So for anybody who's listening, who's teaching school or has kids in school, you want to learn more about it, try that, 773-279-2114. I have to call it up. I don't know what you get. As soon as we're done talking, I'll find out.
I think I'm gonna do the same thing when I get off the air today. And I've written that down here, too. I'll keep this as reference. If any of you didn't get that or you didn't have a piece of paper handy, you can call me and at the station number, and which I know many of you already have burned in your brain in letters of fire. And you can call me, and I'll give you that number as well. Bill, thank you so much for spending this time with me. I know you're a busy guy, and you've got lots of stuff going on, but such a pleasure to talk to you. I was so excited about this, and I just enjoy you so much.
Always good time for you and the wonderful folks listening on KWSU, Wazoo's own station.
That's right. Go Cougs, right?
Thanks, Robin.
Okay.
It was great to talk with you.
You too. Thanks, Bill.